Hey, what's up? This is Mike D from Killswitch Engage, and you are listening to Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me. This is episode 219. The guest this week is Mike D of Killswitch Engage. The new album, Atonement, out August 16th, this Friday, on Metal Blade Records, so make sure you are picking it up, streaming it legally, or however you get your music, because it is awesome. If you love Killswitch Engage, you're going to love the album. If you don't love Killswitch Engage, you're wrong. But make sure you're checking out Atonement this Friday. Metal Blade Records, almost 4 years into the podcast, now we get a member of Killswitch Engage, bucket list band, bucket list guest, always one of my favorites, top five all-time bands, and what I think is a perfect band. I talk about it in the episode, but Killswitch Engage is one of the most ripped-off bands in the entire planet. Every local band in every town is probably like, you know what, we should do something like Killswitch Engage. It'd be awesome. It happens. But Mike and I talk about that and so much more. It's a great conversation. So let's check out a message from our friend Scott Bowling.
My name is Scott Bowling. I have a show called Good Company. Good Company is a show where we film artists in the rock genre, and we talk about their first record all the way to where they are now. We've interviewed bands like Korn and Seven Dust and Rich Ward. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook under Good Company or Good Company with Bowling. So please, if you get a chance, check it out.
Good Company!
Make sure you guys are checking out Good Company with Bowling, doing so much good stuff over there. Let's check out a classic Killswitch Engage track. Then we will hear I Am Broken 2. And then one of Mike D's other bands, Death Ray Vision. Let's check out a track by them, and then I will be back to talk to you momentarily.
We'll be right back.
is we have Mike D'Antonio of Killswitch Engage on the line. New album and Atonement out August 16th. Mike, pleasure to have you on the show. Been a huge fan for many, many years.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Well, let's dive into Atonement. Like I told you before we started recording, amazing album. I mean, you guys, I don't think you've had a bad album in the catalog. I mean, you might be able to argue that point. But to me, it's a Killswitch Engage album. It has all the elements I want, plus some of the old elements I wasn't expecting, and even Chuck Billy, man. So all in all, a great album and great job.
Well, thank you so much. Well, you know, we never have special guests on our records, or if we do, it's pretty rare. I think there's probably been four at this point. Still, All That Remains. Jesse even came in and did some stuff when Howard was in the band. Now Jesse's in the band. Howard came back and did some stuff. And then the one song that you were talking about with Chuck Billy, it just came to us. They were just saying Chuck Billy should be on this right. song. We weren't trying to crowbar in, you know, our favorite singer or anything like that. But it was just an idea, and it actually worked out, which sometimes those ideas just fall away and don't work out so well. But so stoked that he had time to do it, and he sounds freaking incredible on it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's not a blatant special guest. It's not just like we've you don't yell out Chuck Billy or anything out like right before it happens. You know, it just happens. And you know, it doesn't come out of the left field. It doesn't sound wrong. It just it everything works on this album, man. I can't say enough about it.
That's great. Thank you so much. Like you said, it took a little while to create, a lot longer than we expected. We rewrote 21, 22 songs. And we just had to say, okay, people just stop writing. We were just so excited, and we were on a roll, and everyone was bringing in demos, and all the demos were really good, and we just had to cut it off and say, okay, this is going to be a chore when we give it to Jesse. And sure enough, gave it to Jesse, and it was kind of like, you know, gridlock. He didn't know where to start. Then he had some vocal surgery, and then finally finished everything up. He did about 17 tracks, something like that, about 17.
Nice.
So this record, as opposed to other records, we were actually able to choose exactly what should be on the record and what should be, you know, B-side, or I don't know what we're going to do with the other songs just yet, but we really, there was no, oh, this is good enough, or this maybe isn't good enough. This was this for all band members, it was a united stance of this, and it's the first time that's happened.
Well, I know of the album, you wrote the final track on the album, Bite the Hand That Feeds. You know, being a band for so long, you know, how do you write now as opposed to when the band started? I mean, I'm assuming now is more laptops and Dropboxes, and, you know, when you guys started, you know, maybe you were bringing riffs to rehearsal type stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, in the very beginning, it would be one person had a riff, another person had a riff. We kind of try to link them together. And then, you know, it was just a brainstorming session, which 9 times out of 10, that is the best way to do it. Now we all go in our separate corners, like you said, with our laptops. I use Logic, and I'll write complete demos with drums and guitar and everything. And we'll take them to practice, and I'll have like a demo listening party and kind of decide what riffs should stay and what maybe should go. Usually we'll go all sit behind a Pro Tools rig at, you know, Adam's house or something, and we'll, if some of the songs just need a little push here and there, we'll rewrite them right in front of everybody, and everyone will be able to throw in their opinion on, you know, what their specific instrument should sound like on certain parts. That part can be really fun and very inspiring when everyone is kind of has their input and they're throwing it in. But I have a good feeling that the next record is going to be a little more.
You broke up there. The next album is going to be a little bit more what?
Oh, sorry. I have a feeling that the next album is going to be a little more like that. Maybe everyone involved, everyone talking it out, everyone jamming in the same room. Back to the old basics.
Now, I'd heard on another interview, when you first heard Howard's part on his song, you were actually recutting some bass the first time you heard it. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. You know, this one, you know, we always do the drums first. And then usually guitars, and then the bass, and then the vocals, or the bass will happen at the same time as the vocals. But this one, I wanted to save time. I thought for sure we were going to run into a time crunch, so I recorded all the bass on the road. And sometimes when you're recording on the road, levels are a little bit up and down. You know, things can go wrong that you don't notice at the moment. So when we were all done, I brought everything back to my house, and Adam and I were just banging out a couple of things. And I had heard that track, and I said, "Oh no, I guess we're going to be playing that song. I better learn that one a little bit better." Because it was really that good from the beginning. It was just a solid, solid track.
Well, when you guys posted that photo of Howard and Jesse together, you would have thought the internet exploded. I mean, it warmed everyone's heart. You guys have had one thing that a lot of bands haven't had when it comes to dual singers is they're both very emotional and both very aware of their mental health. You don't have a lot of machismo in the vocal area. You know, even though Howard's a big dude, he still comes off as a gentle giant kind of thing. And that's one thing that, so I guess when those two guys get together, you know, all of our collective hearts warm inside.
Well, right on. I mean, who needs to be mad at people? I mean, things happen, and sometimes they happen for a reason.
Yeah.
And things just weren't working out with us and Howard at the time. So we went our separate ways, and he has since gotten, he's in excellent health, great condition. He's cleaned up his act. He's in a great new band. We've been playing festivals, and those guys have been playing alongside us, and it's great to see him. Why on earth would we want to say anything bad? Kind of when you're friends with us, you're friends for life, no matter what happens, you know. We just really wanted to see Howard. Howard just wasn't himself at one point, and we wanted to see him get better, and he has. He's gotten even more better than anyone could have hoped for. So we all wish nothing but the best for that guy.
Oh, absolutely. Back to recording, I did want to bring up one thing. Hearing you talk about recording bass after the vocals were put down, I grew up playing bass. I played bass in a few bands or whatnot, and, you know, when you demo stuff, especially 20 years ago when I was doing it heavily, you know, you were drums, bass, guitars, vocals, you know, there was an order. When Megadeth did Dystopia, Dave Ellefson said he tracked all the bass first. I was like,
first.
Wow.
Before the drums?
Yeah, before the drums. He did all of it to a click track. And then I guess Chris Adler would have came in and played to his bass lines. I was like, wow. But he's a machine anyway, and I'm pretty sure Dave Ellefson hasn't hit a wrong note since like 1984. So.
Oh, for sure. He's amazing. I don't know that I could pull it off.
Right.
That's beyond my capabilities. I need to hear, you know, if the guitars are like angry in certain parts, if I need to, you know, lay in a little bit more. And also, the thing with us is tuning. Like, it's so easy for the bass to go out of tune, and rather than have to do all my tracks over again, to have the guitars there perfectly in tune, you know right away if you're out of tune. You can just re-record whatever section you needed to re-record on the spot, and not have to be bothered later on down the road redoing whole songs because it was out of tune.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, that just, it blew my mind. I think when I think about it, it still blows my mind that Dave would even attempt that. I'll be seeing him in a couple of weeks at an expo, so I'll have to see how true that statement was. But it's funny if you watch videos.
That's pretty amazing, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never heard anybody do that before.
If you ever watch him do like the some of the bass lines where like maybe Mustaine will talk over it live. Dave Ellefson is just like looking out in the crowd playing these intricate bass lines for a long period of time, like it's like he's scratching his back or something. It's an amazing it's an amazing thing to watch, especially as a bass player.
Some people are too good.
Yeah, which I kind of when I kind of think about you like that, I feel like that you're too good at everything. Like you're like, oh yeah, I'll play bass in Killswitch. Oh yeah, I'll be a graphic designer. You know, I'll design all the cool shit. You just seem like one of those artsy dudes. Artsy dudes that you know, like, hey, we need a bass player. Mike, can you play bass? Sure, I'll figure it out. And you become phenomenal.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. But, you know, none of anything that I've been doing came fast. I've been doing graphic design since 91, or no, way earlier, high school. So, 87 maybe. And I've been playing bass since probably around the same time. I fell in love with all my buds that were in bands having the time of their life. And I couldn't play an instrument at the time. So I just said, what can I do to help these dudes? Oh, wait, I'm in high school at a voc school and there's printing presses. Why don't I make stickers for my friends? Or why don't I do some flyers or some 7-inch covers? So I became that guy where I would just do stuff for bands for free and just sneak them on the press when the teachers weren't looking. And then I said, what am I doing? Why am I not having as much fun as these dudes? I need to get in a band. So I had a buddy that was selling guitar and a buddy that was selling a bass. I really liked the guitar a lot, but the bass was a little cheaper, so I went for the bass. And since I've sort of learned enough guitar to be able to pull off demos, but I kind of wish I stayed at guitar. I can go back to bass than it is start on bass and go to guitar. It's just a little bit more dumbed down on the bass with the 4 strings rather than the 6.
See, my path was I was sitting around a table in the 8th grade, I believe, and everybody at the table was like, I'm going to play guitar. And the brain that I have was like, well, I guess they're going to probably need a bass player, so I'll play bass.
Smart.
So let's talk a little bit about the art direction. One thing that was fun when I had Brock from 36 Crazy Fists on, you might enjoy this story. He was talking about that tour you guys did back in, I believe, like 04. It was you guys and 18 Visions and From Autumn to Ashes. And he said that, basically 3 of the 4 bands had hearts on the cover of their album. And he always thought it was funny because when they would put out promotional items and it had the all 4 of the album covers on it, it just looked like different variations of one album to him.
I love Brock and 36. They've been friends since 2002, our first European tour ever. And that's really funny. I never even noticed anything like that. But I do remember their album having a heart on it. That is really ridiculous, actually.
Yeah, such a great time. And that was like one of those times where, coming out of nu metal, roughly around 2002, 2004, all that period of time, when you guys started popping up and Unearth and all those guys from New England kind of came out of nowhere and kicked everybody on their ass. You guys had a formula that I think flipped music on its side just because it was heavy. We were rocking again. There was metal. There was thrash. And there was actually structured metal sounding music again. It wasn't just super detuned guitars playing, open and one, on the fretboard. You guys did one thing that's still true to this day was instead of screaming the verse and singing the chorus, you guys were singing the verses and were screaming the choruses. That's such a blueprint now that I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day about this, that Killswitch Engage to me is one of the most ripped off bands out there. There's 10 local bands right now in every town that has some variation of what you guys were doing 15, 20 years ago.
Well, that's not such a bad problem. That's all right. At least they appreciate it, man. I've come from so many bands that no one gave a shit about. Am I allowed to say that? Sorry.
Yeah, I know. You can say whatever you want. And,
I'm just trying to relay how maddening it can be when you're in a band. To have somebody actually care about my band is pretty darn cool. It is what it is. Maybe the structure is easier to digest than some other stuff and easier to reproduce. The only qualm I guess I have is that I think you're exactly right that it's more trying to be exactly like somebody else rather than doing your own thing. There are quite a few bands out there now that are taking this sort of metalcore or metal hardcore route and doing their own thing with it. And I couldn't be happier. That's what we did. We were all from hardcore bands, and we said we've been doing this metal hardcore thing for so long. Maybe we should just call ourselves a metal band. Like, who are we trying to kid?
Right.
So we merged those two genres, as seamless as we could, and just tried our own thing. And I think that like Parkway Drive is doing something really cool. I think let's see, who else is even around anymore? Obviously, Lamb of God is doing their own thing. The bands, I think, that float to the top, Mastodon, definitely have a new element that they throw in the mix to kind of regenerate the idea of the whole merging of a few different styles. And I think that's how you stand out. You got to throw something else in there, man.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, 100%. 100% right on that one. Yeah, and you guys definitely did it well and are continuing to do it. Like we said earlier, man, Atonement is, if you like Killswitch Engage, you're going to love the album. You know, it's not, you didn't break the mold. You didn't try the, your Lulu album. You didn't try anything crazy like that. So if you're a Killswitch fan, you're going to love it. And if you're not, you're probably going to enjoy it too, because it's just a great album.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. We wanted to go all out with this one. It's a fresh start. We finished our contract with Roadrunner Records and wanted to start completely fresh. And we've loved Metal Blade forever. Historic record label with some of the most incredibly nice family-oriented people on the planet. So we couldn't have thought of a better place to be. And we really wanted to put this record out and say, you know, thank you to those guys for, like, having us. We wanted to do, you know, special things for them. So hopefully that's what we did.
On the Roadrunner Records front, are you guys probably... You guys are probably in the less than 1% of bands that have completed that 7 or 8 album Roadrunner Records deal that tons of bands have signed. And I think you might be one of the few that have actually ever fulfilled the entire thing.
I don't know anybody who has. So we've been in the business 20 years. It's an accomplishment, man. We did what we said we were going to do. When we signed our signatures on that paper, we actually pulled it all off. And when we were signing, they said, don't worry. It looks like a lot of records. You'll know the end. So we said, okay, if that's how much faith you guys have in us, we'll figure it out. But we made it, and it feels like a brand new thing. From the record cover to a lot of the tones and just the feeling of the record, it seems fresh. So that's what we're trying to get out there. And Metal Blade, go Metal Blade!
I love that you asked to use the classic Metal Blade logo on the album.
That's what I grew up looking at and seeing, and for me, it just seemed like a momentous logo to throw on there, like my childhood coming full circle. I'd always marveled at it, saying, oh, man, it would be so cool to have that logo on my record, and now we finally got a chance to do it. Yeah, I got special permission from Brian, the owner, to do that.
That's a big thing, too.
I don't think they've used it in like 10 years.
Yeah, that's a big thing, too, because obviously you're a graphic designer. You understand branding. So you understand that if somebody wants to use the old logo, you're like, well, actually, we're trying to really focus on this new one. You know, can you use the new one? And so to get that permission and to even ask, is a pretty amazing thing.
It never happens. That was the other thing. I was shocked that those guys were super down. They were like, yeah, sure. Do what you need to do. Make this record look as cool as you want it to look. And that felt great. That warms the heart right there.
Now with the art direction side of Killswitch, do you have your hand in everything, or have there been things that you're like, I don't really feel like doing the Japanese promo single of this random song? I mean, are you hands on everything, or are there things that you kind of farm out?
I try to be hands on everything. It gets real samey if the same person is doing all the design work. So it's cool to farm out some stuff, but I'm always the contact or the guy, you know, giving the ideas or the direction for any of the stuff. Very little that I pass off.
With a band like
you. That makes Killswitch Design like a full-time job in itself.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you got to do all the tour merch and the album artwork and you know, what's the backdrop going to look like? We need this, we need that. You know, you get something in that isn't right. You know, there's a lot going on there.
It's a lot of fun, but, I mean, I also feel like that makes it a cohesive package, that one person is doing everything and overseeing the whole thing, so you don't see some random thing and say, oh, this doesn't even look like the same record, or I don't even know why they use this dumb typeface.
How much does it churn your skin to see, say, local band flyers that are just like Comic Sans and just the most ridiculous stuff you've ever seen, or even if they've added a Killswitch Engage to a festival or something, and you get the artwork back for the festival, and you're like, oh god.
You know, someone's backing up here. My famous line is, oh, that was lazy. lazy design just gets me mad, or like entry level, just, oh, we're just going to throw this picture on here and make it a different color and just get it out the door. No one spends any time on it. I mean, just give it, I feel like you could give it a nice hour if you really wanted to, but what do I say to that? I just say, oh, that's lazy. But I mean, sometimes there's just too many things happening to be able to fix something like that. And,
do you feel like
it's also cool to give other people a shot too,
Yes. Do you feel like it's been a good thing for the band to kind of have Adam, doing the production side of it, you kind of handling the visual side of it, a lot of in-house stuff with the band rather than having to go to different producers for every album and having to get a different art design for every album? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like we know what we want and we know what we like, and visually we know where we want to go. And we've always been the DIY hardcore bands, or we were in DIY hardcore bands, and no one else had, we just didn't have any money to do that. So it's just like, why would I pay somebody when I could do that myself? So we've always kept it in-house in that way and just kept rolling with it and rolling it with it for now 20 years. And, we tried one record with, without Adam doing the production, and I just don't think it came out the way everyone wanted it to. And I can't really see us ever doing something like that again. Adam knows what he wants to hear, and we all feel like he's doing a great job, and we respect his opinion on a lot of stuff. And unless he says, I don't want to do it, I really can't see him not doing every record. It makes things go by fast, too, because he gets things done, that need to be done, and then everything else, whatever,
So when you're doing your bass stuff, I know you said you did it on the road this time, but are you sitting with Adam when you do it, or do you have total control to sit there and hit the air space bar and hit record for yourself and do it, or do you have him sit with you, or how do you go about doing your bass tracks?
I really like having him sit with me and we talk about parts. Last thing I want to do is write a part that doesn't fit the way he envisioned it, or the person who wrote the demo envisioned it. I don't want to, trounce or step on anyone's guitar riffs. I don't want to ruin anyone's idea of how a song is supposed to shape up. I like to try stuff. I like to do improvisational stuff on the spot. And then I also totally agree with whatever Adam says if things aren't working. And he majored in bass in Berkeley, so the guy knows his chops. If I'm ever stuck and I don't know what fill to do, he's just like, oh, just do this.
You say that. I actually worked with
back
a guy.
Back and forth kind of stuff.
I worked with a guy one time that he said he was majoring in cruise ship bass playing. I was like, what are you talking about? And he was going to music school in Nashville for... to play bass on cruise ships and like cover bands and stuff. I'm like, that's insanity right there. But he's probably made a couple million dollars or something, and I'm over here laughing at him.
I mean, cover bands do really well, like way better than original bands, so that's not a bad thing to do. At least he knew what he wanted to do with his life rather than just floundering around trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that whole tribute band cover band thing. Are there Killswitch Engage tribute bands out there that we know of?
I've seen a couple here and there. There's definitely some like young kid ones, which is really fun to see. Kids picking up instruments these days doesn't always happen so much. Music industry not doing super well. It warms my heart to see that kind of stuff. And then sometimes they'll send us the videos and stuff like that, and I'm practicing the songs. It's a neat thing. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. You guys came through here a few months ago with Crowbar at the I'm out of Louisville, so you did the Mercury Ballroom here, but that venue every other night of the week, man, I'll have like a Tool cover band and a Korn cover band and, you know, a tribute to Metallica. And it's just big business, man. They give away the tickets. They get a ton of people in, sell a lot of beer, and everybody makes a little bit of money.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing is they sell a lot of alcohol with those type of bands. People just, it's way older crowd and they want to have fun. And there's nothing better than throwing some back and watching a band perform some songs that you really love and enjoy.
I had a friend of mine take me to a Pantera tribute band, and that's my band. That's my favorite band of all time is Pantera. And so we go to the show, and I'm skeptical the whole time. I'm like, I do not want to see this. I do not want to get mad when they start messing the songs up. And they actually did a really, really good job. And the guitar player nailed the Dimebag solos, so I was happy. And it was cool to hear those songs loud again. So yeah, it was a good time.
Nice. One quick thing going back to the show that you saw. My new band, stuff I do when I'm off the road, Death Ray Vision, opened that show.
Nice.
And yeah, if you ever want to hear some more stuff that I do, it's more of a hardcore sludge southern rock thing than Killswitch. But it's a new record is out on Bullet Tooth Records. It's called Negative Mental Attitude. And a lot of it sort of reminds me of New York style hardcore from back in the day, the tough guy stuff. And I guess the big joke is that we're not tough guys at all. We're just actually fat, skinny guys just writing some tongue-in-cheek shit.
Nice. That's the I think a lot of people in some of those you might get one or two actual tough guys, but for the most part, all of us hardcore metal guys are all teddy bears at heart, right?
I just love breakdowns, man.
Oh, God,
we usually we'll write whole songs around one single breakdown, which is awesome.
Well, let's finish this off with the single that's out now, the track that's out now, which I'm assuming is a sequel to Pantera's I'm Broken, but it's called I Am Broken 2. talk a little bit about that one, man, because that one gets you right in the feels if you're a lyric guy.
Yeah. Wow. I definitely had nothing to do with the lyrics. The first time I heard it, I bawled like a little baby, and it actually took me a good solid 4 months before I could stop crying every time I heard that song. It just, it's one of those tunes that you can attribute to your own personal life. And maybe if you're going through some really tough times, boy, oh boy, it'll tug at your heartstrings. Jesse hit the nail on the head with this one. So, you know, it's about depression. And we partnered with a great anti-depression corporation in Chicago and donating proceeds to those guys. And the video is even sadder than the song. So I believe that's going to be out on Monday.
Nice. Yeah.
Watch out. Get out your Kleenex, kids.
Yeah, get the hankies out, man. The one thing I love about it too is it's like 2 minutes and 20 seconds long. It's like, you know, in and out, the hook of the song sticks in your head for the rest of the day. You know, you guys didn't see that it was only 2 minutes and 20 seconds, so you added an extended bridge or anything. It's just like in and out, bam, you're crying, and you know, now deal with the rest of your day.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really didn't need anything else. The song was pretty straightforward, and it works as is. We definitely had a little trouble with radio saying that it was too short, like rock radio, active rock radio. Whatever, we're not going to make a song extra long just because someone's telling us that it's a little too short. We like short songs. We got attention deficit, so you know, I think this one's perfect.
Well, that's where you bring back Chuck Billy. You add a bridge, then you yell Chuck Billy when he comes in. Like, Chuck,
I know,
Billy.
We screwed up. We screwed up. Next time, there's going to be a chorus of people screaming, Chuck Billy, enter the room.
Were you around him when he recorded that? I was backstage interviewing Gene Hoagland, and he walked in, and I didn't realize how big of a man he is.
He's huge. We've done tours with them, but no, I wasn't around. Adam lives in San Diego now. He ditched the Massachusetts people and moved out to San Diego. So he's close to LA where Chuck lives and was able to run up there and record him real quick in a day.
Nice. Yeah. What a great dude. And he's a Talk To Me alumni also. So, man, we'll finish it out. I'll throw one I Am Broken To here and finish it out. And just let everybody know, man, that the new album, Atonement, out August 16th. As soon as Amy sent it over to me, it was like Christmas in my inbox, and I've probably listened to it more than you guys have. So love it, and can't wait for the actual
that,
album to come
my out. Friend, that, my friend, is impossible. We've been listening to it for 2 years straight. There's nothing I want to do less than listen to that record again. So there you go. That's all you now.
Well, the fans are going to love it, man. Mike D'Antonio, man, thanks for taking the time today, and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey guys, this is Aaron from Betraying the Martyrs, and you are listening to Talk To Me.
Through the day, it's only profession if it's done.
All right, huge thank you to Mike D of Killswitch Engage for coming on the podcast. Make sure you guys are checking out the new album Atonement out this Friday, Metal Blade Records, August 16th. And for you guys checking in about the Rockin' Pod Expo, I just got back last night. I will do a full recap later this week. Got some good interviews coming your way. So until later this week with my Rockin' Pod breakdown episodes, interviews with Dave Ellefson, Erie Vaughn, maybe Toby Wright, the audio kind of came out funky on that one, and Kenny Olson, friend of the show, Kenny Olson. So until then, I am Joshua Toomey, and this has been the Talk Toomey podcast.